Welcome to Bizart, the podcast of the odd, the art and the rest. Any questions or comments, or to send a story under 300 words, email bizartcast@gmail.com. I'm Madeleine Swan and I write weird and strange stories. This is Stephen Waring.
Hello.
And you can find his brain at lofiguy.com.
Hello.
Good day.
Hello.
Welcome to another episode of Bizart. Dry your eyes. Stop weeping onto that biscuit. Don't wipe them with the hamster. I don't know what happened there. But anyway, welcome back.
Right.
Stephen's Art Jollies. Stephen's Art Jollies. Boo, 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 boo.
What I'm going to talk about today is creating your art website.
Ooh.
Obviously it's not essential, but I mean, most people do have a website. Most artists do have a website. I guess it's just kind of like having a...
It's very useful.
It's an extension of you, a flyer or a business card or anything like that, or a postcard or whatever you might have made up before the days of the internet. But now, I mean, it's very useful to for showcasing your work.
Hard to remember the days before the internet now, to be honest.
Yeah, well, we had it at uni, but it was not great, really. I didn't even think I used it. I hardly ever used the computer room at uni.
No, I mean, we would go to the computer room, and that's where we would do our work. And other than that, we didn't have them.
Yeah. The whole computer room had one scanner, and I never figure out how it worked. It was just a mess.
And we only had one radiator, and we all had to crowd around it. And everybody sang, "Oh dear, what's that in your pocket? What's that in your pocket?"
This is going down the road of, in our day, "Dad, I want to be a writer." Like that, isn't it? Websites. Now, there's lots of ways to showcase your work. I mean, if you're not particularly computer literate, or you probably use social networks and that kind of thing. So I would have thought that, I mean, obviously social networks are a great way to showcase your work. You could set up a blog and use it for that. So,
indeed.
That's always an easy way and an obvious way to get your work out there. If you want to get a bit more advanced and you have a bit more computer knowledge, you could basically... You're always drinking Coke when we're making
I am. It's my podcast fuel.
We should phone them up for sponsorship. especially when you burp. It's like gratification.
It's uncontrollable.
Content management systems, which is basically like a back end, is useful. And many people use WordPress.org, which differs from WordPress.com. Now, WordPress is kind of king for what most people use these days, comic artists.
Me.
You. I've got a WordPress.org self-hosting site. You've got a WordPress.com.
Yeah, although Bill does say that he finds WordPress a bit limiting at times. But I suppose that's, you know, if you don't want to make everything from scratch, it's good, yeah.
Mm.
Like me, I wouldn't know what to do.
Bill's got a site where basically he told a friend who's a web designer what he wanted, and his friend set up all the technical stuff for him, and then Bill did all the artisty, all the creative stuff with what's the thing that he uses, the what's it called, Trunch Munch or something? I've forgotten the name. I use it on my Bootstrap. Yeah, Bill uses Bootstrap.
Punch Munch.
Well, you can see the similarity.
Yeah.
Now, I think you need a little bit of you do need a little bit of technical knowledge for basically it's a little bit of a learning curve, but it's not too bad. It depends what you want to do. If you just want an easy to set up website, then I guess you would go to something like WordPress.com and do it all there. If there's a particular theme that you would like to install, you may have to pay for it on WordPress.com. but it might be set up, there might be a theme for artists on there. There probably is. I know there's lots of themes for photographers, and basically it's the same kind of setup, isn't it? You know, displaying photographs, displaying art, you know, it's going to be the same sort of thing. A lot of arty, crafty people use Etsy. I've never tried Etsy. DeviantArt's another one, isn't it? Now, DeviantArt, well, it used to be, I remember when it started, it was a bit...
It's a bit flooded now. I mean,
a bit weird, but
everyone's
now
on there. I don't know.
Everyone's on it. I mean, it is massive now, and that's kind of good and bad at the same time. Because, I mean, Etsy, DeviantArt, Cafe Press for T-shirts and Redbubble and all of those kind of sites, you do get lost in a sea of other artists.
Others clawing at your garments. Please look at my things before I'm transmuted off to the sea.
So, I guess... It's very funny. So I guess those sites are good if you are good at social networking and you have a big friend base and you can, you know, you can point people to that and sell your work through those outlets. But otherwise you will get lost in a sea of creatives, some good, some bad, you know. That's the thing, there's no real...
Well, it's difficult to say good and bad as well, isn't it? I mean, you know.
Yes, who's to say?
Indeed.
There we go, and basically it's like Here I Am, Employ Me, isn't it, with your website. I mean, I think the best thing to do is not overcomplicate things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess if you went completely the other way and it suited your style of work, you could go to town and just go crazy and like have a, you know, weird, wacky website. But most art sites are clean, well presented. Few examples.
Everything's very clear. Like, for example, to use Bill as an example again, he's got photography, digital art, paintings, and that all in very clear categories.
Mm. And he's learnt that through work, because he is a graphic designer by trade, isn't he? So
yes.
You know, that very Zen Apple kind of fake Zen, but that kind of philosophy.
I think it's
good. That's what people want.
Yeah.
That's what people want to see, and I think they will be put off by
something too complicated.
Mm. Unless that is your style. But
even then, I think the artwork can be complicated, but the layout should be quite simple.
Mm. It depends what kind of artist you are. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, if you're an artist who does comic art and your style is completely indie, kind of crazy, doodly madness, then
saying. I think that your artwork should be like that, but when it comes to finding the different things that you do, it should be simple.
Yes.
People get put off.
Yes, yes, very, very wise. For promoting your work, it's kind of... some artists do have agents, but really, agents are kind of galleries or gallery owners. They have their favourites, and they promote your work.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise online, if there's an online gallery or a web gallery, you really want to find one that suits you, that you know will suit your style. Getting everything out there to the extreme and having your work everywhere is not necessarily the way. So, you know, there are sites that will sell your work online, but, I mean, you probably want to contact other artists on those sites to just find out if they're all right, how well they do, whether they sell much work through there, what the people like who run the site. You know, it's just common sense, really. Don't just put your work out there willy-nilly.
Mm.
To be honest, social networking's great, WordPress, whatever. Your blogs are great, but if you want to do something a little bit more advanced, ask a graphic design, web designer friend, or just learn a bit of simple web design, which is what I did, and I kind of know enough to bash a site together. So there are many ways, but the easy route would really be something like WordPress.com, wouldn't it?
Or lean out the window screaming your wares to the people on the street.
What, with a megaphone?
Yeah. Scribbling stuff on bits of paper and flinging it to those around
That's
you.
That's what I do. Works for me. I've got a commission.
That's true.
A lot of the work that I get recently is word of mouth. isn't it?
Yeah,
it's through
word of mouth is definitely a good thing.
And I think the website is basically there to back that up. It just gives you a bit more...
something solid for people to focus on, isn't it?
Credibility, yeah. It just makes it real.
It's like your little home online, isn't it?
Yeah, but I looked at my notes in horror earlier. It was like, this just doesn't... It's like Rimmer in Red Dwarf, where he's like... he's written all the words for the answers for the exams on his arms and legs and everything. This makes no sense!
And then he puts his hand on a bit of paper in the hope that it's got some answers in the smudge that he leaves behind.
And then he does that. He does that, yeah, the salute, and then just passes out. Yeah. That's basically what happened before I did this podcast. I looked at my notes and this just makes no sense whatsoever.
This is all just Steve's dreamscape here. None of this is really happening. This is his unconscious mind. Right. Funnily enough, mine is about social networking as well.
Oh.
So it's a big theme today.
Maddie's actually very good at social networking. I'm kind of learning.
I don't know. I'll try.
Thing is, I just forget for like a month. And then, why is nobody checking out my work online? Why am I getting no likes?
Yeah, you do have to remind people that you exist. That is the major part of it. So you do have to do a bit of it every day.
I'm still here, cooey.
What's the jingle of this bit? I can't even remember.
Maddie's
magic moments. Maddie's magic moments. Us creative types use social media to promote our artistry, be it writing art or putting frogs in dresses and uploading the pictures. I recently read John Ronson's So You've Been Publicly Shamed. It's important to point out that it's a book about people who have faced internet onslaught due to something that they've specifically said or done, however small, as opposed to those singled out by others, such as Gamergate and that kind of horrific madness. Mm. John Ronson says public shaming, including the stocks, was outlawed here for being too mentally brutal. But, you know, he's right. It does seem to happen online an awful lot now. And I must say, the thought of doing and saying the wrong thing online terrifies me, because half the time I do explain myself quite badly, especially out loud to people.
I think you get freaked out on Facebook, actually, because I might leave a comment on your page every once in a while. I'll leave a comment.
Mm.
And I think you're more sensitive to how things are, whether things can be misconstrued or not, than I am. You know, I kind of know
that's an important thing because anything can be taken out of context, I think, which is, you know, important to sort of bear in mind. I mean, there are people whose lives are literally ruined and they get fired and all sorts. One woman didn't leave her house for a year. And, you know, I admit I worry a lot about Twitter and Facebook and I do censor myself an awful lot. Yet somehow somebody still seems to get cross at me occasionally for something, you know. I hate that because I'm a really anxious person and I can't bear upsetting people in any capacity. Interestingly, Adam Curtis, the documentary maker, says social media has turned into a giant echo chamber where what we believe is constantly reinforced by people who believe the same thing. which is something to think about.
That's true, actually. I mean, if you think about the days before the internet and before like-minded people had places to kind of group together. Now, I mean, obviously that's wonderful that we have that.
Mm.
But, I mean, remember old TV where it was like three channels?
Yeah.
Everyone watched like
the
same thing on a Saturday night or whatever. But I guess we had a lot more in common with like people that we wouldn't...
Well, yeah, I suppose in some senses, but I suppose the main thing is that at the moment I've noticed that I think things have always been the same, but it's just another platform where people can be more direct with people. Like I remember, I write erotica or porn or whatever you want to call it, as well as other things. And I remember seeing on Twitter a writer I was following saying, look at this person's tweet, let's Twitter storm them.
Mm.
And basically this guy, who I had never heard of, had written erotica, what an awful grubby way to make a living. And, you know, I didn't like it, but I thought I'm not going to Twitter storm some bloke that I've never heard of.
Taking the piss. I mean, he probably wasn't.
Well,
but
I don't think so. That's his opinion. He is allowed it. I may not like it, but he is allowed to say that, you know. And basically, it seemed after reading the book that if you want to stay safe and unostracized, you have to kind of be bland. But, you know, is that a good thing? Like, there's a girl in it who, she was, she had a picture taken of her by a friend sort of sticking her middle finger up and pretending to shout, but because a sign said, be respectful. But the thing is, it happened to be at the grave of one of the soldiers or something.
No.
She didn't actually think about that part of it. She was just looking at the sign. And to this day, she's lost her job. She's constantly got people having a go at her online. And if you type her name in, that is the picture that comes up.
People do love to jump on a moral bandwagon.
Absolutely,
don't they?
Yeah. And what they've had to do is John Ronson sort of gave her a hand and put her in touch with these people for free. Who they do this for money, but for free they did it for her. Where they kind of create an online you, which is a safe version of you, so that if you type your name in, all these other things come up which are really inoffensive and bland and that. And it sort of raises the question of, is that a good thing? Or, you know, I mean, it's helped her find a new job, which she needed, and also it's taken a little bit of heat off of her. But, you know, a fake you, it's very strange.
Just people. It's weird, isn't it? There's like this mass censorship going on by the general populace. It's, I hate to say it because people like Jeremy Clarkson sort of keep going on, you know, go on about.
You can't say anything. You
can't say anything these days. Yeah. But I mean, there is an element of truth in that. I think.
I'm a person who I like political correctness. You know, I like not. Basically, I like not being mean to people.
Yeah.
I like not making fun of people who can't help it or, you know, stuff like that. But I do say the wrong thing, and sometimes people do say the wrong thing, and you can make a bad joke and it's there forever, you know. It's like a couple of other things on the topic where there was an author, to sort of bring it back to writers and so on, there was an author who basically trolled himself for 4 months after getting a bad review for his interactive teddy bear detective story. It's on some site where you make your own book and it's interactive kind of thing. And someone reviewed it from an online magazine, and he disagreed with the review, but he just wouldn't let it go. People were responding and he was saying, oh, you don't know anything, this a reviewer has lied, he's told a lie, he didn't, you know. But he did it for 4 months and people were telling him, look, just stop what you're doing,
you wouldn't let it lie, would
and he
you?
Was like, well, by saying stop, you mean you don't like the truth, you know. And it was just like, clearly I felt really sorry for him in a way, because he was clearly some older bloke who wasn't used to how things are.
Yeah.
Now,
oh yeah,
you know. And he just didn't understand the consequences, I suppose, you know.
It's the wild west of crazy out there, it really is. And yeah, I think you have to be quite tough.
Yeah, because there was also a lady who she basically, I'm not sure of the exact wording, but she said, I'm not your, she sent it in a Facebook post, this was, I saw it myself, I'm not your servant, stop asking me the same questions over and over. Like, oh, I don't know, when is your book coming out? That sort of thing. And everyone went nuts. And, you know, I agree, it was bad-tempered of her, you know. It doesn't look good. You have to think about that sort of thing. But I think she actually lost sales from it and, you know.
So she was just being a human being, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I understand from the fans' point of view. They're like, hey, you know, like, how dare you talk to me like that? I'm interested. But at the same time, just that moment, that one moment of crazy or, you know, losing yourself can result in unforeseen circumstances. Anyway,
creative curiosities. Fantastic.
Yes. Well, I'm very intrigued by the concept of immersive theatre. I want to go to an immersive theatre experience so badly that I believe my face may melt clean from my face. I'm in film, I'm sick of zombies, but I am quite interested in the idea of a zombie experience. I think it'd be quite fun. I'm not so much looking forward to the survival side of it, like with, food and making sure you've got food and that sort of thing.
Somewhere to go do a poo, yes.
Well,
Because
that sort of thing.
obviously, all the public services and everything, and all the or like your water board and all that all be gone. So your toilet wouldn't be working. So you'd be
No.
digging a hole in the
No,
garden.
it would literally be like a survival weekend, but I love the idea of an interactive horror experience. I think that sounds great. But there's other immersive theatre experiences, if you're not keen on the horror idea, which it sounds great to me, but at the same time, I would have to dose myself up quite a bit because I've got an anxiety problem. But in these things, sometimes you have to wear a mask so that you're totally neutral for the performers. And also, interestingly, until August the 30th, the Vault in Waterloo are doing something called Alice's Adventures Underground, and it looks so good that I think I might cry. So go to that if you're in London till August the 30th.
I kind of wish the world was all like
Yeah, I
that.
wish that that is reality. Actually, that's another thing that goes with this theme. A while ago, Alex Fox, who I was an intern at Bazaar, she was telling us about this thing where basically you're sort of kidnapped and taken to this strange place where you're in like some other world, and you can tell them beforehand. Obviously, you have to tell them beforehand what kind of thing you want to see. So, if you wanted if you say you wanted like an Alice in Wonderland type experience, they would kind of set that up beforehand, take you, and then put you in there. And apparently, like they actually say, make sure that that night you're not alone because it can be quite an intense experience, and it's quite fascinating.
So that takes the fun out of it, I think, because it'd be better if like your friends set it up,
Yeah,
you
but
know.
how would, like, when are we ever going to do that for each other?
Because
I put pencil on the floor. Woo, it's an interactive pencil. It's Freaky Film Club,
Freaky
Freaky
Film
Film Club,
Club,
they are
freaky
freaky
in
in
your
your
face. Okay,
face.
since the general election, I keep eating ice cream.
Yeah, is that like a comfort food thing?
Yes.
Yeah. I've been looking at the short films of Abdul Zainidi, spelled Zainidi, because a film of his recently won Weirdest Film at Cannes. And apparently another short film of his, Bread Dream, was the first Bruneian film to make it to Cannes. The one who got him Weirdest Film is called Low Back. I haven't seen that one yet, but do have a look. You can find Bread Dream and, oh God, what is it called? Taluki? Something like that.
Yeah, something.
On YouTube, and it's got subtitles, so that's good. He also set up an organisation called Brew Realism, which helps local people to make short films. So basically, he's a very interesting chap.
I thought they were really good actually. They had a lot of the it's what you said actually when
When we were watching it.
you said that it's got that kind of spontaneous creativity thing.
Yeah.
Not like when you're making student films, but this is good.
Yeah. It's kind of, yeah, you can kind of see the pure creativity of it. It seems to be, anyway, made purely for the love of what he's doing, I could be wrong, but that's just how they come across to me.
They do. I really like the way that the sound is all kind of natural. You got the hum of like they're sitting around on a kitchen table, aren't they? On the
Yeah.
first film we saw, and you kind of got the hum in the background, and I kind of like all that. I kind of
Yeah.
like it kind of lo-fi stripped down,
Lo-fi. Yeah.
it's kind of Dogma 95 kind
Yeah.
of.
But they're surreal as well. They're not sort of like entrenched in realism, There's a kind of magical quality to them.
Yeah,
So, yes. Have a look.
quite a human quality.
Yes.
Both the stories are actually quite similar, really.
Yeah, I think they're shown together a film festival, so I don't know if that's why they both feature boxes and magic food and stuff.
That kind of joy of creating something, and the people in the film were all obviously having fun.
Yeah.
It really shines through, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's something that gets that gets missing in a lot of films that you see, even some very good ones. You can see the strain in the actor's eyes. Yes. You know?
Those tears of what will the future bring?
That's what Hitchcock. Okay, we're gonna throw these turkeys at you.
Yeah, we're gonna tie them to your face. And they're probably gonna peck out your eyes, but don't worry, I can probably get a good upskirt shot.
Yes.
So just go with it, woman.
Dear.
Okay, so I read the story now. Right.
Maddie's going to read it because I can't read very well aloud.
He can't read. No, that's very true.
Well, no, I do have
him a text message or anything like that, he'll interpret it in a really surreal way. It's like if you say to him, "Can you shut the door, please?" You know, he'll come back with, "You told me to shut the door, so I murdered my family," or, you know, some such thing.
I was thinking of Larry Grayson, actually, when you shut that door.
Yes. Right, this is by Stephen Waring. You can find him at lofiguy.com, and it's called Snow Blindness. A lamp, a beetle, a turnip, a squid. "This is becoming tedious," I protest politely. The young woman stares on like some mechanical half-wit awaiting programming. She's not unattractive, perhaps a little androgynous for my taste. A small whistle hangs from a chain around her neck. A man with a top hat, a gun, a fly, a bloody rail. "A fucking cat," I shout, "and a donkey, an ass, and a big hairy one at that." After a pause, she reprimands me with her gentle, emotionless tone. Now, we were doing so well. Now we shall have to start from the very beginning. "What did I do?" I protest. At this point, I'm beginning to feel a little defeated. She motions for me to stay put, first packing the Rorschach cards into a tidy brown box, then vacating through a holographic door. My finger twitches. I grasp an empty paper cup, and after a few seconds, it ceases doing so. The young woman stands before me once more and sifts through the pages of an old-fashioned ring binder. Eventually, she picks out a battered brown-stained photograph and thrusts it under my nose. "Who's this?" she bleats. "A man," I reply nonchalantly. She places the photograph on the table and taps it with her left index finger. "Look closer." "A fat man," I spit semi-obnoxiously. She nods at me very slowly, but not discouragingly. I elaborate some more. "A fat man wearing a toupee and a disgraceful pink and brown polo shirt." "Very good, but you should take a look at yourself in the mirror sometime," she implies smugly. I look down at my attire self-consciously. She's right. It's not much better than the man in the photograph. I must admit I'm tubbier than I imagine myself. I'm perplexed to see that she is unpacking the same box of inkblot cards she had only put away a few minutes ago. "This is nonsense. Can I get some kind of representation in here? I have rights, you know." "You're free to go any time," she informs me. "This is not some police interrogation room." "Oh, thank you very much," I surprise myself by saying. Upon exiting the small room, I'm faced with an extended corridor. Bright white walls and fluorescent lighting hit me with snow blindness.
You have been listening to Bizarre, a podcast of the odd, the art, and the rest. Any questions or comments, email bizarrecast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.